divine intervention, boys and asthma, school backpacks, and a look at passive range of motion exercises. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. We're going to have a great show this week. I've gotten some good email in from listeners, and I'll be talking about that in just a little bit. But first of all, I want to remind all of you to head over to nursingshow.com. Check out all of the information you'll find there, recent articles, links to interesting news items, as well as the show notes for every episode. And that's important because I can only give so much information here on the podcast, and it's incumbent upon you, the medical practitioner in the field, to go out there and check out these links for yourself and make sure that you know how to apply them in your own scope of practice in whatever it is that you do and whatever facility you work in. So it's important to do that, and so I urge you to check that out at nursingshow.com. You'll find a lot more over there as well. I got a great email in from listener Alyssa. She is just getting started on her second degree or third degree, I'm not sure which, as a BSN. She is changing careers in her life and becoming a nurse, and she's excited about that prospect, and she just wanted to thank me for the information here on the show. So, Alyssa, keep in touch, and if there's anyone else out there that's a nursing student, you want to make sure you check in and let me know how you're doing, and I'd love to hear from you. You can also sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter, and you'll find out right on the front page over at The Nursing Show. It's a great way to get all of the links and information sent to you every single week, and I think it's a great way for you to keep in touch and just have another way to follow up and study with all of those great links that show up in the show notes each week. Alyssa, thank you very much for your email. I also got an email in from listener Tamara, and she was checking in to let me know about her gratitude in my focusing on different nursing programs and how they, some of them seem to have students struggle much more in them than others. And she wanted me to talk a little bit more about that. I think this is going to be something I'm going to cover in an article over at the website. And once I get it written and do a little research, I will let you know in a future episode when it's going to be posted or link back to it if it's already been posted. Of course, I would urge you to check out the Nursing Show site regularly, and you'll be able to see that post pop up when I publish that article. Tamara, thank you very much for your concerns. Good luck yourself in your schooling, and I urge you to stay in touch through the Nursing Show newsletter as well, and let me know how things are going. Just shoot me an email from time to time, and I do appreciate you taking the time to send me the email that you did. I'm going to lead off the news today with a story I found over at CNN.com in their health section. It's on a recent study looking at how many people believe in divine intervention. Now, in this case, they're looking at people with terminal health problems, issues that are not going to be solved by medical science, that they've exhausted their options for treatment, or treatment may be deemed futile by their medical providers, and these patients still demand treatment, believing that they will beat the odds and survive where others have not. So divine intervention is something that's at the core of someone's belief system. You know, if you look at the holistic nature of a person, you have to understand that their faith is an important part of their makeup. Their spirituality is just as important as the physical nature and physical items that make up their person. So we need to be the person that gives them the opportunity to make an informed consent, a well-informed consent decision about any medical treatment. We also need to make sure that we are not influencing their decision or attempting to influence their decision based on our own decisions, the decisions that we would think we would make in a similar situation. First of all, it's their medical problem and not ours, and our belief system and our spiritual beliefs and our faith is going to be different. It's different from person to person inside a family. Of course, it's going to be different from patient to patient and from nurse to nurse and physician to physician. One thing it's important to make sure you have available are all of the resources that have been used to make these decisions. Work with physicians that are treating these patients and encourage them to bring with them studies, CT scans, x-rays, all of the things they've used to make their diagnosis, all of the things that have been used to make a determination that terminal illness is indeed present and that further treatment will not make a difference. Sometimes patients don't get an idea of the total picture of the testing process that's involved in making these decisions and these diagnostic decisions. So by providing them a visual cue from all of the information being used to make this determination, bringing that scientific evidence in can sometimes help them to influence them to make a better informed decision. Notice I said didn't influence them to make the decision you want them to make, but to make a better informed decision. Still, at the end of all of this, you need to respect whatever decision the patient has made. And that may be to refuse treatment. It may be to ask for further treatment that may not be normally indicated. If they have the insurance wherewithal to take care of that, if they have the resources to handle getting that treatment effectively, then that's something that's going to be decided upon in your facility, and you need to support that decision. And then do what you do best. Help them be comfortable, help manage side effects, help take those little interventions that make such a big difference in a patient's overall well-being from minute to minute, and help them to be prepared to make the next decision that they have to make in their own healthcare process. So I urge you to check out this article and the links in that article, because there are a lot of good ideas here about how to deal with patients, and also some good references that you can use to help point patients in the right direction and their family members as well, should they come up against this difficult decision-making process. You know, it's not easy, and it's not going to get any easier just because we have these links, but we need to have the resources at hand to help us be the best nurses we can be. And I think that ultimately we provide the care the patient needs and give them the care based on their decisions and not just ours. Moving right along, the next story I'm looking at is a study that looked at the ways that children with asthma grow out of their asthma, or some of them do at least. And what this study found was that while boys are more likely to have asthma as children, that number flip-flops, and women are more likely to have asthma as adults. And that's because boys, because of changes that occur around the time of puberty, actually grow out of their asthma, or much more likely to grow out of their asthma than girls are. This study found that there might be a possible link to sex hormones, and this may actually lead to further treatments made available to both children and adults with severe asthma. The study looked at 1,041 children who were enrolled in a larger asthma treatment study. These children were enrolled between the ages of 5 and 12, and then were followed on an annual basis. And each year, they were administered an airway constricting agent, methacholine, which caused constriction in their airway. And this was to measure their airway tolerance for irritants. What was found was that the change in the speed with which the airway constricted remained constant for girls through puberty and into adulthood, but that the change became more and more resistant in boys. And in fact, boys began, in some cases, to just not respond at all to the agent, indicating that they no longer had asthma. This is an interesting study. There's more information on it in the article, and you can find the entire study at the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine in their August 2008 issue. But it certainly indicates that we need to have this information, especially if we're pediatric nurses, to be able to counsel parents on the fact that, yes, their child may indeed grow out of asthma, and boys are more likely to outgrow asthma than girls, according to this most recent study. Something to keep in mind, and to, of course, further follow-up is indicated. So hopefully they'll be able to develop further treatments from the findings of this study so that everyone can benefit from the ability to grow out of this disease. Finally, I'll look at a story looking at kids returning to school and the fact that they need to make intelligent decisions, or at least their parents do, when choosing the correct backpack so that we can avoid back injuries and other orthopedic problems associated with an ill-balanced load of heavy school books. There's a great article I found that was based on a press release from the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, and a physician there, the director of orthopedic surgery, Eric Wall, released a series of recommendations on how to make good decisions picking a backpack for school. Included in are looking at having wide padded shoulder straps, a cushioned back, and waist straps to help distribute the load better. Also, for people with extremely heavy loads, a backpack with wheels that enables children to wheel their load about is a good recommendation. The backpack load should be no more than 15 to 20% of the child's total body weight, and the heaviest items should be packed in the backpack closer to the child's center of gravity, closer to the child's back. Also, children shouldn't be encouraged to carry their books every single day if they don't have to. Keeping books at home or in their locker when necessary are always good options. And children should learn good lifting techniques so that when they're removing and putting on their backpack, they make decisions without twisting or bending over at the waist, using their legs properly to do the lifts. There's more information in the article. I urge you to check it out. I found it over at medicinenet.com, and you can find a link directly to the article in the show notes for this episode. This week's tip kind of came about because I was looking at that last article in the news, looking at orthopedic problems, and I began to think about my training in nursing school on range of motion and passive range of motion exercises. And it's one of those things that unless you're in an environment where you're working with patients who are comatose or patients who have a limited range of motion or limited mobility, you may not be doing something like this on a regular basis, especially if you have regular physical therapy available, because physical therapy would provide that option. And yet this is a great way for nurses to help patients maintain and, in fact, increase their range of motion as time goes by, just by doing some regular simple exercises. We're going to do a brief overview, but I found some great links and resources online that you can go and check out all of these range of motion exercises, including a downloadable PDF link, all over in the show notes at nursingshow.com. First off, we have to look at range of motion. Range of motion is the distance and direction of movement of a joint. So when you have limited range of motion, it means that that specific joint or body part cannot move through its normal range of motion. Now, we all know that we have different ranges of motion. You know, you can take a little kid and practically fold them up into a ball, but as you become an adult, as you lose some of that child flexibility, you begin to lose that range of motion. And in fact, without regular exercise and regular stretching, you can lose a whole lot of range of motion if you're not careful. And so patients that are losing their mobility for whatever reason, either through a chronic illness or through a recent procedure that has them immobilized for whatever reason, doing any range of motion exercises that are possible for that patient can go a long way towards helping them restore themselves to full health or the best possible health once they are recovered from the illness or injury. And of course, for patients with chronic illnesses, it can help maintain a good body lifestyle and maintain the highest level of health that they can attain at any given moment in the disease progression. There are a number of diseases that actually prevent joints from having full mobility and can actually cause disability over time. These include rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, also cerebral palsy, fractures, dislocations. and also other diseases such as syphilis even. So it's important to keep in mind that just because someone doesn't have a specific orthopedic problem or a disease that targets the joints specifically, this doesn't mean that they cannot begin to experience some kind of limited range of motion. I want to talk briefly about some of the resources I found so that you can know where you're looking. First of all, at the University of Washington and their medical school, including their orthopedic and sports medicine program, there's a great look at exercise and arthritis, including range of motion exercises. These are exercises that can be performed by the patient or assisted with from a caregiver. And some of the things that are talked about, tips that should be used, doing these exercises once or twice a day, performing each exercise on a 3 to 10 repetitions per exercise. Also, moving slowly and not trying to force anything, breathing evenly during the exercises, and counting out loud as you go. Starting off slowly and gradually adding to the number of repetitions for an exercise is a great way to avoid further injury. Also, don't try to push range of motion beyond what is comfortable until you have begun experiencing the stretching that is occurring. So going to the point of just slight resistance and then releasing and not going farther will gradually stretch out range of motion for the patient. I urge you to check out the link in the show notes for this particular site. There are videos that you can download to actually view each range of motion exercise for this particular page. And I think it's a great resource that I found here. For passive range of motion exercises, I found a great article in Nursing Magazine from 2006. I have a link in the show notes to their site, and if you don't subscribe, you can actually access that site for a small fee if you want to look just at this particular article. I also urge you to check out your local libraries and your educational institutions and your facility libraries, because I'm sure they have this article from 2006. This is from March 2006 of Nursing Magazine. And it's a photo description of passive range of motion exercises for patients that are on bed rest or otherwise unable to move themselves. And this is range of motion exercises that are used to prevent long-term joint contractures, slowly moving each joint through its full range in all of the appropriate planes for that joint will maintain or increase patient mobility and will prevent limited mobility when they are able to finally get up, if that is something that they will be able to do. Even if they're confined to bed rest for the rest of their lives, preventing joint contractures, maintaining full proper body alignment will help improve their circulation and help improve their overall health and wellness and response to other interventions as well, and will help enable them to have a better quality of life no matter what their end state is likely to be. So I urge you to check out the links in the show notes. As always, I can only cover so much of these things, and it's important for you to follow up on those links as well. This is just a brief overview of range of motion exercises and passive range of motion, and a quick reminder on some of the things that you can do to make a big difference in such a small way. And that's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week and remind you that I love to get emails and comments in from you on a regular basis. So don't forget to sit down and shoot me an email sometime. You can send those emails in to comments@nursingshow.com and let me know what you've liked about a recent episode or perhaps a correction that I need to make, because I'm certainly not perfect and I want to make sure that the information provided here is the best information possible for nurses. That's it for me. I'll wrap up with the PodSafe music like I always do. This particular week, I'll be wrapping up with a song from Natalie Gelman. I saw Natalie out in Las Vegas at the Podcast Expo. She does a great job, performs some great music, and this is her song, Always Was. So until next time, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
It was the fall of 99, and we were barely 14. Had all heads in the clouds, and we were living a dream. And I thought you were everything I was ever gonna need. But I was wrong, and love fooled me. And now I can't play loud enough to tune out your eyes. Slipping between. And when the night